If any of you are friends with Norman on Facebook, you'll have seen that he's actually been practicing Queen of My Heart for years now. So he is actually auditioning for next Sunday. Don't let him tell you otherwise. This morning we're gonna have a wee look in a wee bit at Luke 14, where Jesus talks about the cost of discipleship. And I want to talk to us this morning about the cost of the call to follow Jesus. What is the cost of the call to follow Jesus? And I wonder if MDs ever bought anything or got themselves into something before knowing what the final cost is going to be of that thing. Has MD ever done that before? Sometimes it works out really good. Sometimes it works out really bad. I was trying to think of examples of both. So when you go on holiday and you're sitting down at the beach and you see somebody coming along with a whole rack of genuine Ray-Bans that are 30 euros, but actually, by the time you buy them, they were only 10 euros. And so you think you're getting into a real pair of Ray-Bans for 30 euros, but they actually are only 10 euros by the time you buy them. So sometimes it works out well. Sometimes it doesn't work out so well. Either maybe going to a car garage to get a nail taken out your tire, and by the time you get your car back, you need to replace the whole engine and replace every wheel and every single door of the car. And you've got yourself into something that you didn't know. When we bought our house a couple of years ago, we created a budget. We worked out exactly how much money we'd saved, how much money we could spend, and what we were going to do with that money. And we planned and stuck to it, and we knew how much we had and knew what we could do with it. When we ran camp a couple of weeks ago, Jocelyn and I get given a budget from Scripture Union, and they tell us to go and create a fun holiday for the kids that come for a week. And we've got that budget that we need to stick to, and we know exactly how much it is, and we know exactly what we can do to create the best holiday that we can for these young people. And so in these examples, we know what the thing's going to cost before we get into it. We know how much money we have before we get into it. And I wonder if we really have counted the cost of the call to follow Jesus. I wonder whether we've really counted up the cost of what it means to follow Jesus. And whether you've been a Christian all your life, whether you've just given your life to God, or whether you've not yet made that commitment, I wonder whether you've counted up the cost of what it means to follow Jesus. So let's have a wee look at Luke 14. Hopefully it'll come up behind us, all being well. Yeah, let's read Luke 14, 25 to 33. It's the cost of discipleship. Now great crowds accompanied him, and he turned and said to him, this is Jesus, he's walking, and great crowds are following him. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, going out to encounter another king in war, will not sit down first and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? And if not, while the other is yet a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So therefore, any of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. So it's great that we can just say that they're Jesus' words, they're not my words. You know, this is what Jesus said, and we're just going to unpack a bit of that. And to me, I read that, and I see that word hate, and it's almost that like stomach churning gulp moment. Like, did Jesus really just say that? Did he just say that I need to hate my mother and father, and brother and sister, and son and daughter? And as a new dad to my lovely little girl Eva sitting there, that takes me aback. That takes me aback. And we could actually probably spend the most of the morning unpacking that one word in that passage there, but we're not going to do that. I want us to read from Matthew 10:37-39, and it's the kind of parallel gospel for this part. Hopefully that will come up as well. So Matthew 10:37-39. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And I think we see something of what Jesus was getting at there. In the time when this was written, there was a kind of a lot of emotive language used, and hate's a strong word. And as you dig into it, the original Greek word did actually mean to hate, but it's unpacking, I guess, what that word hate means to us and what that word hate means in culture back then. And I think when we read Matthew, we see something of what Jesus was getting at. Not a new commandment to hate everyone that means something to you, because that goes against other biblical principles. But actually, that there's something of Jesus urging us to put him first. And I think that word hate in this context starts to be a bit more like love less than. So if you do not love your mother and father less than me, if you do not love your son and daughter less than me, then we start to see some of that is what he was unpacking in Matthew 10 there. So we get to this point of Jesus calling us to love him more and to put him first. And the cost of putting God first is that nothing else gets to come first. The cost of putting him first in our life is that nothing else gets to take that place in our life. And in following Jesus, we've got to give everything in order to put him first. You see, he calls us to love him more than we love anything else. He calls us to put him above all other things, more than any money we could own, more than any jobs, more than any status, more than our ministry, more than our lifestyle. He calls us to put him first, to love him above all those things, and to put him first. It was one of my friend from school. It was his birthday last night, and we were out for a couple of drinks for his birthday. And one of his other friends was a guy I went to school with, and he was an interesting guy at school. But he left in a pretty successful band at the end of school, and left with a contract with a record label, starting to do some tours and starting to make it big for himself. And he was talking to me in hindsight, so of the 2 years of leaving school and being a drug addict and taking a whole wealth of drugs, having hundreds of thousands of pounds in his bank account at 19, living a ridiculous lifestyle. He sat and told me last night, he said, I would change all of it. I would give up all of it, because actually the way that made me feel was completely dissatisfied. The way that made me feel didn't ever come close to what I thought it would. And he said, I would give up all of that. And that's an extreme example of giving up stuff. But God calls us to put him first. He calls us to let him be that place, that first place in our life. And then it goes on to verse 27, where it talks about bearing our cross. Let me just read it again. Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And again, we're already in the second verse of it, and it's some really difficult stuff. It's some tough stuff that we're hearing from Jesus here. And the cross back in that day was a symbol of pain and suffering. It was the way that people were crucified, but it was also a symbol of death in that crucifixion. And again, we could probably spend the whole morning unpacking what it means to bear our own cross. But the word there that's used, so the word to bear in that sense is the exact same word in the Greek language that was used as Jesus bore his cross to Calvary. It's the exact same word, bastazo, any good Greek pronunciation. It's the same word that to bear our cross in the same way that Jesus bore the cross to Calvary. And it's that same meaning of what we're called to do. And I think Jesus was asking them here to put to death their own plans and desires and turn their lives over to him and do his will every day. And it's on that journey to Calvary with Jesus as he bore his cross, as we bear our cross, that we lose our life and that we find life in Jesus. And that's what we read at the end of Matthew. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And that's what Jesus was getting at there. If we actually bear the cross, if we put down the stuff that's ours to lift up his, that's where we find life. And we read countless examples in the Gospels of some of Jesus' disciples where it took one encounter with him. It took one encounter for Jesus to come and say, follow me. And they gave up everything. They gave up jobs, they gave up families, they gave up careers because they had an encounter with Jesus. And in that moment, they seen something of the value in laying down everything of their own life to take up everything of Jesus' life, everything that God had called them to. And the cost of the call to follow Jesus is high. It's not a cheap cost. It's not an easy life. There's no cheaper versions. You don't get any discount vouchers. You won't see it on Groupon. The cost to follow Jesus is high. And it's an all-in commitment. What do you call a guy who's half in his house and half out it? Do you know? Hamish. Let you get there. Yeah, it's getting there. Some of us are a little bit slower than others. The cost of following Jesus is high. And it can't be a half-in, half-out thing. It can't be a sitting-on-the-fence thing. It can't be, I'll give him some of my stuff and I'll hold on to some of the stuff. I'll put him number one some of the time and I'll put the love of money there the rest of the time. Or actually, I'll put my relationship first and I'll put Jesus second. It doesn't work like that. God calls us to lay down everything else to put him first. And we see something of the transaction that we read about here in the giving up of our stuff, that we get to take up the life that Jesus has called us to. And I think we sometimes, I think I get that transaction wrong quite a lot of the time. We're actually, if we think that if we do something, then maybe God will do that for us. If we spend a little bit more time reading the Bible, maybe God will sort out that situation at work for me. If I spend a bit longer listening to some worship music today with God, then maybe he'll give me that job that I interviewed for. If I put a little bit more money in the offering basket, maybe God will sort out that relationship problem that I've been having for a while. And I get that transaction so wrong with God, because actually he already gave us everything. Stephen said it earlier, he gave his son to die on the cross so that we could have a way. He gave his son to die on the cross so that we could enter into relationship once again with him, just like it was in the garden in the beginning, that we could enter into relationship with God once again, because he gave everything. He gave everything he could to buy our freedom, to buy our forgiveness. And it's already paid for. It's a free gift. We can't earn it. We don't deserve it. And God owes me nothing. God owes me nothing, but in his grace, he continues to provide and he continues to give everything that I need. And all he asks for in return is for our hearts to put him first above all things, to lay down all the other things in our life and to put him first. We're just going to watch a wee video, if it works.
That whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have done?
Yeah.
When did you get here?
Got some birds, some wild birds.
Really?
Yeah.
Where'd you get
them? Out in the field over there. There's a field of wild birds.
Huh. Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, I'm asking, what are you going to do with them?
I'll play games with them.
Games?
Yeah, I play games with wild birds, yeah.
What kind of games?
Sometimes I can probably stick in there, you know, and I'll be like, ah, 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 and tag you. And then sometimes I like to rattle through the cage, and I think it's an earthquake, and they love that.
What happens to them after you're done playing games?
Usually I feed my cat. Yeah, my cat likes wild birds.
Say what? I am fond of wild birds.
You are?
Yeah. Let me find them for you.
You want to buy my wild birds?
Yeah.
They're no good for nothing. They can't do no tricks or nothing. And when you open the gate, they're just going to fly away.
How much?
You serious?
I'm very serious.
$5.
All right.
$10.
Okay.
$20.
They're wild birds.
They're exotic birds.
You found them in a field.
An exotic field.
See, Jesus gave everything for us. He gave everything because he loved us. He bore the cross to Calvary. It cost him his blood, it cost him his tears, it cost him his life so that we could have life, so that we could have freedom from sin, so that we could have freedom from the stuff that holds us back. And that was God's free gift to us. Jesus came to solve a problem. And the problem was our sin. And he was the only person who could voluntarily take our place and satisfy God's requirement for sin to be punished. He was the only person that could do that. Because the price for our sin had to be paid. And he paid it on our behalf on the cross. And Jesus asks us now to put him first. To lay down everything, to lay down all the stuff of the love of the world and pick up our cross. He asks us to follow him so that we can get the benefit of all that he done on the cross. The Bible says that all of us are sinners. We're all in the same boat. We've all fallen short of the glory of God. We all need saved. And Jesus' blood was shed for all of us. The price has already been paid for our freedom. And have we committed to giving him everything? Have we committed to laying down everything to follow him? Don't be satisfied with anything less. Don't be satisfied with anything less than fullness of life with God. It's not easy. Please don't hear me stand up here and say if you give your life to God, it's an easy life. It's not cheap. I think we've heard that. But there's no greater joy than following Christ every single day. There's no safer place to be than in the will of God. In the words of the famous song, "When I Survey Love," so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. You see, Jesus gave everything out of love. He gave everything out of love. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. Why don't we stand if you're able to, just as we pray, and the guys are going to come back up and lead us this morning. God, will you take us into an encounter of your love again? God, will we encounter something of your love once again? God, the love that you gave everything. So God, will you open our hearts to you this morning? God, will you open our hearts and will you help us to lay down the stuff that's difficult to lay down? God, will you help us in the stuff that actually we've been holding on to for years? Actually, we don't know another way of life than that thing being first in our life or that thing being the priority in our life. And God, as we choose to go low, as we choose to lay down our own stuff and give you all of it, God, will you help us to be better fathers and mothers? God, will you help us to be better sons and daughters? Will you help us to be better brothers and sisters? God, as we choose to put you first, will you help us in those things? God, will you help us to lay down everything again? Will you help us to choose to put you first again? Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all.